stop. It is recording.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. This is Nancy M. Oliver, Chair of the Board of Accountancy. I am calling this meeting to order. Today is Thursday, December 16, 2021, and the time is 8:33 a.m. This meeting is being held via Zoom video. Please be sure to mute your mic through the Zoom or mute your phone if participating by phone. If you wish to speak, please unmute. Please do not use the chat room for any discussions. Should any technical issues arise, the meeting will be paused until the issue is resolved. Julie, please go ahead and take roll call.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I've been running with the IT guys, so I'm just a little bit behind the ball here. So we have Nancy, present by Zoom. Amanda Fells. Sorry, I'm out of order, but I have to just go and... Oh, we'll skip. Okay. Board members, let me just skip down. Deanna Franco.
Here, by Zoom.
Stu Morris.
Here, by Zoom.
Haley Lyons.
Here, by Zoom.
Jason Robinson.
Here, by Zoom.
Joe Sullivan.
Here, by Zoom.
Raul Valdivia.
Present, via Zoom.
Did I miss any board members? We have also board staff Kimberly Fast.
Present by Zoom.
Jeremiah Leppert.
Present by Zoom.
Joel Parks.
Present by Zoom.
I'm Julie Nadeau, also present by Zoom. We have Angie Hunt, board legal counsel.
Present by Zoom.
Guests. We have Amanda Fells.
Present by Zoom.
And Kathy Henderson.
That's Stu.
That's Stu.
Oh, thank you. I didn't know that was Stu.
It's his alias.
Darren Hall.
Hi, everybody. Here.
Pooja Menon.
Hi, present by Zoom.
Sherry McPherson.
Present by Zoom.
Tracy Allen.
Present by Zoom.
Tanya Moffitt, who's chair of the BOAC.
Present by Zoom.
And did I miss anybody else? You have Elizabeth Palmer.
Present by Zoom.
Thank you.
Okay, I believe that is everyone in attendance today. Referring to our public board meeting agenda, the second item is to review the agenda and review and approval of the agenda. Are there any changes needed to our agenda? Okay, you guys still there? Can you still hear me? Okay, great. I do have one question. Kim, later in the day, we have listed a discussion on the AP and club classes. Do we have individuals showing up to have that discussion with us at a designated time later?
Yes, we do. At 9 o'clock, we'll have a guest from two people from NASBEC, Pat Hartman, to discuss the AP and club credits, and Kyle Barrier to discuss foreign transcripts and the evaluations of those.
And they're both from NASBA?
That's correct.
Okay. And they're going to be showing up at 9, so we want to make sure that we're mindful of their time and attendance and being able to join us today. So I would just say that when they arrive, we do need to give them the opportunity to have the floor at that time so we don't take up more of their time than what is necessary. Are there any other changes that we want to consider here this morning? Okay, I'm looking around, I'm not seeing any. The third item is the Complaints Committee. This is a meeting summary from the November 18th. This is in their supplemental materials. So are there any comments on this?
None for me, I think.
Okay. All right, Tanya, I'm seeing you shake your head no. So?
Yep, none for me as well.
Okay, great. All right, hearing no other comments, let's move on to item number four, which is opening the floor for public comment. And before we do that, and I turn it over to anyone who would like to provide a comment, I want to provide a little bit more introduction to our public comment section. Going forward, we want to make sure that we hear all public comment before the board would take any vote on any matter that's on our agenda in a given board meeting. We will want to make sure that we have heard and considered all comments and taken those into consideration as we're making decisions for our professional organization. I asked Kim to come and present to the board in our next board meeting a plan for making sure that our public comment section is mindful of those parties who want to provide comment. And it will include some form of a sign up if you wish to speak and be formally recognized for the public comment, but it will not limit individuals from just showing up to the board meeting and seeking to request comment. The public comment section will be a time for the board to listen as opposed to a back and forth dialogue. However, the board is always welcome to ask for clarifying information or additional information from whoever would be wishing to speak. So with that, I want to open up the floor for any public comment.
It's just quickly, have we voted to approve the agenda yet? I don't think we've done that.
So let's go ahead.
That's okay.
So I'll back up. And is there a motion to approve the agenda for the day with the one minor modification that I suggested earlier?
I'll make a motion to approve the agenda with one modification.
This is Stu Morris. I'll second it.
Okay. Is there any further comment? Okay, for the board members, all in favor, say aye. Or raising your hand is fine. Aye.
Aye.
Okay. The motion has passed. Okay, back to the public comment. Want to open up the floor for any public comment on any of the matters that we have on the agenda today or other matters that need to be brought to the board's attention.
We have another guest joining us.
Great. Looks like Rob. Where'd they go? Julie, is that individual? Did they join? Oh, there we go.
Robin Matthews.
Okay, great. Welcome, Robin. Robin, we have just started our board meeting. We're to that section of public comment. So we've just opened it up. If there's anything that needs to be brought to the board's attention, this is that opportunity.
Okay. Can we just wait a minute? Sarah Crumble's coming from my office, and she's not prepared our comments.
Okay, yes. We can.
She'll be logging in any time. They told us 9, but she was going to log in a little early, like I did, just in case.
Sure. It's not a problem to wait on that or to hear any other comments.
Nancy?
Kimberly?
Robin Matthews probably doesn't want to give her public comment in the public session.
Okay.
Okay. And
just to clarify, the public comment section is more for things that are, you know, generally about board business, not individual cases or things like that. So if you have been invited to attend an executive session for a case, then you're going to give comments on something like that. You would do that during the executive session during your textbook. But right now, this is public session for public matters of the board. And any case that's pending is not public.
Okay.
Sarah Hummel has joined us as well.
Great, thank you. Welcome, Sarah. Since we have a few minutes before the 9 o'clock slot for the individuals from NASBA to join us, I think it might be a good use of our time if we go ahead and look at maybe one of the other agenda items so that we can keep going on a good pace today. So, Sherry, would it be okay if I called on you to provide the report of the OSCPA?
Yes, I would like to start out by thanking Nancy and Kimberly for providing the Board of Accountancy update and our recent professional issues update, which was the first week in December. That was very, very appreciated, and we do extend that invitation to the board yearly. We think it's a great opportunity for the board to be able to chat about anything that's happening. Even during the years where there's not rules, it's an opportunity to share anything that would be of interest, or also that, it's a learning opportunity where licensees can, utilize information in a proactive basis. For example, having a better understanding of inactive or retired status, as an example. So thank you for that. And it's December 16th, which means for the society yearly, that means we officially have a new slate of proposed board members and line officers for our upcoming fiscal year, which starts April 1st. So that's today. We'll be announcing that soon to members. And members have been, of course, they're always aware of that announcement ahead of time, and also their opportunity to weigh in on feedback. So that's always a December 16th check mark, so happy for that. Just looking ahead, we are working on all of our programming for CPE, and we're continuing through January, actually the first couple of days of February, in remote. As we have moved through things previously, the very start of prior to the pandemic, we were working hybrid, so most classes were available live, plus also a web option. That allowed us to be able to move very quickly into this remote environment. We've had, overall very, very good feedback from members. And member two said, oh, I wish I could be back in person again, but no negatives. So as we look forward, we're looking at having most of our courses with that hybrid option, and that way folks can come either in person or jump in remotely. That's helpful if you're in town traffic, or if you want to be coming in from, for example, Baker City or John Day, etc. Don't have to be putting the driving time in. So anyway, just helping members in that regard. I do continue to get comments from partners about their concern about candidates going to Washington because of the difficulty of the Oregon application process in comparison to other states. And I keep hearing from members that we have a more onerous process. So I bring that to your attention again. So recently, but still, it is a problem I'm concerned about. Folks obtaining their license out of state, and frankly, the public protection for that. Because as I hear more and more, members talk about the pipeline, their concerns about that, at the end of the day, that's about public protection when people are overworked or they don't have adequate staff. And so anyway, thank you for the opportunity to bring that up. And really, that's the biggest thing right now. We'll be moving into another busy year, and I do appreciate any of the feedback that is we'll be providing coming up to you related to the rules changes. And thank you for the opportunity to be able to jump in and provide comment on that. I know that sometimes I'm looking at that, or our members are looking at that from a different lens than from regulatory side. So I'd like to hope we can find common ground on all of those things. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. I wish everybody happy holidays. And joining us today, Tracy Allen, our vice chair. So she's a little bit under the weather at the moment, so I'm jumping in on her behalf. So thank you. We appreciate being able to be present.
Sherry, can I ask a follow-up question, please?
Certainly.
Can you just provide a couple sentences on how often you issue a newsletter from the OSCPA?
Okay, yes. 4 times annually would be the paper. happy to have an article. We've talked about that before. But also, we on a very, very frequent basis have electronic newsletters going out. We would be happy to put something in electronic, and then we could always, you know, rerun that in the magazine paper, because we know that folks look at each of those, you know, items in a different way based on preference. So
okay.
I would be happy to have the schedule for the magazine sent to you and Kimberly.
Could you do that, please?
Absolutely.
I really appreciate that.
That'll be easier for both of you.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you, Sharon. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and move on to the report from the OAIA. I think that's Amanda.
Hi everyone, thanks again for having me. So at OAIA, we are wrapping up the successful fall seminar season. We too have been experimenting with in-person versus online versus hybrid classes. And so we, at our last class, we offered a hybrid, and we found about a third of our attendees opted to come in person, and about two-thirds opted to stay remote. So I thought, you know, we'd give it the choice. Either way, that's what people were choosing. That might be helpful information. with everyone else's planning. Also, in order to accommodate kind of some of the challenges of online classes, one of the feedback pieces that we've heard is that having an 8-hour class online is challenging. And it's sometimes it's hard to stay focused and it's hard to stay engaged. So we are still offering our traditional format. We're actually experimenting this year with an alternate format for our 10:40 class, where instead of 2 8-hour days, it's actually 8 2-hour days. And each session will kind of dovetail into another one. So if somebody would prefer more days of smaller chunks, that is also an option. So we have that starting next week, running through the end of the year. So that will be 8 2-hour sessions there. So we'll be interested to see. So far, I've been very well received. And it has a lot of interest, so we'll see how that goes. And see how we feel about that starting in January, because we're that's complete. Moving on from there, we have our updates coming in January, federal tax updates, city Portland updates, Oregon updates running for the first, in the early part of January. And then we also have the state and local tax conference, which we're sponsoring with the OSCPA. Very excited about that. And to try and get everybody prepared for this upcoming tax season.
That's a lot, yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at. Happy holidays to everyone.
Thank you, Amanda. Just a comment on your move to, instead of 2 8-hour days, going to 8 2-hour sessions, if I got that correctly. I think we've all maybe experienced that some of the other professional organizations are going to the same type of format. For example, the GFOA offers their traditional, you know, 1 week on site over the course of several weeks, offering a couple of these sessions each day. ISACA has also gone to that same format, and just as a recipient of both of those, I find that I feel like I'm actually a little bit more engaged in each one of those offerings because they're spread out a little bit. So I think you probably are going to have some good success there. So keep us updated on the feedback that you get, because I'm curious about that one. Great. Okay, so we're still waiting for our friends from NASBO. Kim, I'm just going to jump around here on picking out items that I think we can get addressed. One of the items is old business on the 2022 meeting calendar. Are there any concerns on the meeting calendar? And is this, Angie, something that we have to vote on, or is it just we accept the meeting calendar?
We should vote on it, yes.
Okay.
Has any of the dates changed from when we looked at it the last time? Sorry, I didn't compare.
Yes, the BOAC changed one of their dates.
Okay. Sorry, let me just double check that I don't have anything overlapping. What was the date? What would that change from the BOAC? Okay.
Would everyone like to see it? I can bring it up and do a share screen.
It was their April 28th date that they, and actually, I don't remember who had the conflict, but April 28th was in conflict.
Oh, was it me? It was me.
It might have been you, yes.
I was going to say, I think it was you, Angie, that had the conflict.
this name, sorry. Okay, yeah, and I have no problem with that change. Sorry.
Are there any other comments from board members on the meeting calendar for 2022? Okay, is there a motion to accept the calendar as presented?
Make a motion to accept the calendar as presented.
This is Stuart Morris. I second the motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor state aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion has passed. How about, let's go to the qualifications committee. There's a meeting summary as of December 1st. It's supplemental. Who's on point to speak for the qualifications committee?
That would be me.
Great. Jason.
So again, they're a great professional. I like the way they go through the candidates and discuss their how they feel about their qualifications and everything. Very well put together. Very well run. So.
Great.
Any questions for me about that? The meeting or the qualifications, the CPAs that are coming up? Yeah.
No, thank you, Jason. Peer review? Who's on point for the peer review?
Well, I don't know that we have a. I think, Nancy, that you were our board liaison last, and then maybe we don't have a board liaison anymore?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, basically the summary wraps up what their last meeting was.
Okay. So are there any questions or concerns on the peer review supplemental information that was submitted? Okay. Looking at our agenda, Kim, let's go ahead and go to the report of the executive director.
Okay, thank you. Like Sherry had mentioned earlier, Nancy and I did have a presentation for the professional update at the OSCPA conference, and that went well. Lots of good questions that we were able to answer, so that was successful. Our office has just recently completed the PCI reporting and found to be compliant. That's a credit card piece that we have to make sure that all of our credit cards are secure. And this is ensuring that everything is perfect. And we've got a pass on two. We have two different accounts, one for credit cards and one for checks. And both of them are virtual, so we have been compliant. DAS has provided a reopening for state government that will begin January 1st of 2022.
Are you expecting your video?
And during the reopening of state government, the state has been allowing for schedules to be more flexible.
And then the video will turn on.
If you want to work 100%
no, not
in the
my,
office,
not my
you
video.
Want to do a
I want to be able to see what they're doing.
Right.
You know, a few days a week and work from home for a few days a week, and then some people just want to work from home, you know, 100%. I work with all of our staff members. We have made some scheduled changes. However, all of the changes still ensure that we have coverage in our office. And it helps with, you know,
stop and
work and life balance, work-home balance, and so we're excited about that. Julie and I continue to work on the implementation of the IT project, the estimated timeline for all the applications. So right now we're just doing firms and individual renewals. We have such as reciprocity, reinstatement, civil penalties, all of those others. We expect that to be live in February of 2022. We have identified a project manager to assist and ensure that we keep timelines for the IT project. This includes deliverables, requirements, testing schedules, etc. This individual has a wealth of information and experience.
He's a former
government employee, which is helpful, so he knows how the state runs, not the procurement, the IT folks and EIS and all of those shops. We're aiming to contract him, or hopefully have the contract signed by February 1st. Before that contract can be approved, it goes through DOJ and they approve the contract. So any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay, seeing no questions from the board members. One of our items on the agenda today is to look at the 2022 committee interest list for the Qualifications Committee, the Peer Review Oversight Committee, the BOAC, and the Laws and Rules Committee. So one of the things here, so I've got...
Did Nancy
breathe,
or
did
me?
I'm sorry, what?
Nancy, you froze there for a minute.
You froze on it.
Wait, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm seeing a thumbs up. Okay, so I think that we need to take a moment and really look at our committee attendance. The listing as provided, while there's a bunch of names on it, and it's so great to see interest from licensees, that was really great, but the list as it is doesn't provide us enough information. And I think it's important that we have a fair representation on our committees as well as the board to make sure that the profession is adequately represented. Fairly represented. In other words, a combination of smaller firms and larger firms. Individuals from different areas of expertise, right? We want audit and we want tax. We want different industry groups to be fairly represented. In other words, we don't want everyone just from government or just from the not-for-profit or just publicly traded. But we want a combination of all of those areas of expertise. So I have asked Kimberly to take those lists and further populate the list so that we can have a better understanding of the individuals who have interests, and so that we can make sure that on these committees that we have a fair representation, we have some diversity on all the committees and the board. And so Kimberly is going to be bringing us back to us, those lists back out to the board members, and we're going to have a deeper discussion about who's on those committees, so that again it's fair and well represented from our industry as, or from our professional position representing the entire CPA professional community. Is there any other concerns or comments or suggestions on that?
Nancy, I think we should have the liaison, the board liaison, listed on there under their committee also.
Okay. And that's a good idea. Thank you, Jason. We will have that. Other thoughts? Okay. So it looks like we've had some other folks join us. Julie, are we...
Kyle Barrier has joined us. Pat Hartman is just, she's in the process of joining right now. And then we had somebody else, I didn't catch the name.
It was Kimberly Bevins, I think.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, great, welcome. Okay, so we were gonna have Pat and Kyle from the NASPA, is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so I see that Kyle has joined us, so we're just waiting for Pat. Yeah, it looks like Pat is joining us as we speak. So So good morning to both Kyle and Pat. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today. And I know that Kim reached out to you to ask you to join us today to provide a little education to the board regarding AP and CLEP classes. And so I don't know which one of you wants to go first, but I'm going to just go ahead and turn it over to either one of you who would like to start.
I'll just defer to Kimberly Blevins from my staff is online. She is one of our education research. I would have her talk to you about AP and CLEP to start, and when we switch to that, it will probably be Kyle.
Great.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay, not quite sure what information you're looking for, but AP and CLEP are two exams. There are others out there, and some schools will have their own exam, but it's basically a way of testing a candidate's knowledge from prior learning. AP is based on high school classes that they took, advanced high school classes, and CLEP is the student would study on their own. And any way that they get that knowledge, they're taking this exam to show that they already have the knowledge that they would gain from a basic college course. They're typically introductory level courses, English or literature sometimes, maybe a basic management or an economics course. They don't cover higher level topics, but they're usually the lower level topics. And then the school will give them credit for that, similar to giving them transfer credit. And then the student does not have to then take that college course and relearn information that they already know.
So thank you, Kimberly.
Kind of coming into this a little blind, I'm not sure what you're looking for. So
actually, you've already provided me some information that I didn't have prior. So I appreciate your comments, and you're addressing you know, exactly what we needed. We wanted to just be a little bit more educated in what AP and CLEP classes are, and making sure that the Oregon Board of Accountancy is not taking some action on AP or CLEP classes that we shouldn't be taking. So your information, Kimberly, is very, very helpful. Everything that you just said is very right to
typically point. Typically those credits would apply more to your general education, the 150, the 120, whatever you have. They tend not to get into accounting and business, maybe an introductory accounting. That's a very rare one that I've seen. The other one that I would see more often, maybe business law or economics.
Kimberly, can you touch on, do most boards accept those credits when they're coming in on a transcript, or are there caps on that? Maybe that would be helpful to look at.
Yeah, they tend to accept them just because the accredited school gave them credit for it. So that's the bar that's been set, is if the school accepts the credit, then they typically don't question that. Some states have said they won't take it towards accounting or business, or maybe just not take it towards accounting. But there's, you know, no reason to not take it towards general education. They got the education, they just didn't take it in a standard college course. AP would be the advanced placement. So they took an advanced high school course. It was a college level course, just gave them credit for high school graduation. And some states have maybe a limit, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. It's kind of hard when there's 55 states out there.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you, Kimberly. Kyle, did you have anything to share with us?
I think Kimberly is spot on, and you know, she deals with a lot of jurisdictions, so I think she's spot on in her assessment. You know, once we get to the professional qualification part of it, maybe I can shed some light. And you know, Pat and I, we've dealt with those professional qualifications and done research on those. So I don't have anything else to add to what Kimberly said.
Okay. I'd like to call Elizabeth Ulmer from Portland State University to just discuss how Portland State you know, from the piece that you know, how those AP and classes are addressed and how they count.
I can actually address it more, not just PSU, but more broadly by universities. These are, I'm not aware of any of these AP or CLETs counting beyond the 1 and 200 level classes. So these are all gen ed, lower division. The one, I'm pretty sure there's only one accounting class between across AP and CLET. You know, that's the AP introductory financial accounting, which introductory means 200 level that's taught by all business majors. So in no instances are these ever counted towards the accounting hours or upper division business hours when we're talking about how they're classified for the CPA exam. And I guess just a couple of other points with these. So these are typically, each university reviews these because these are standardized tests that are done by a third party. So these are College Board, for example, that administers these tests. And with each of these, universities will say a class will count towards, and then they decide, is it your general biology class? But sometimes they know the universities choose to not even count those if biology is your major, for example. So there's a, my point with that is there's a rigorous screening process at the universities. And always recalling, universities are subject to another outside accreditor. So all of this is done in a very structured, objective fashion by the universities with a great deal of oversight. The other point that I wanted to make with these are used heavily by students. And these are used by our top performing students. In accounting, we typically have strong students coming out of high school, so they've taken many AP classes. It's not uncommon to see a student who's a strong student walk in with anywhere between, one quarter to through two, up to an entire year of primarily AP. We see AP much more than CLET. That is not nearly as common in our population. So the other piece of this that I think we can't ignore here is the cost factor. These classes are, these credits, AP and CLET, are less than $100 to take versus a university course, which probably the sticker price, PSU sticker price, is just under $800 for a class. So the effect of this, if there were to be any limits, which I don't understand why there would be on non-business courses, would be devastating to students at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale and would probably have a disproportionate effect on underrepresented minorities.
So, Elizabeth, I'm hearing you say that that when a student submits for an AP or the CLET, that the university has a process to evaluate those classes. In some instances, they would not be accepted. And correct me if I'm wrong, but that allowance, you know, this goes towards your accreditation of being, you know, a higher education institution, and that scrutiny that it's put through is through, you know, from individuals who are knowledgeable on the curriculum that needs to be in place and the knowledge that the individual needs to have at a university level. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, so this is subject to an entire system of internal controls through the accreditors. Now, let me just make sure I'm very clear on one point. Universities typically public universities typically accept all of these. Private universities, and you can look at incentive systems to guess your answer there, private universities will sometimes say, well, we'll accept these as elective credits, but we still make you take the class within your major. But that's a small number of schools with very specific courses.
Yeah.
So overall, they're still accepting them. It's just a difference between do we give you credit for actually taking the exact class or do we give you elective credit?
Okay. And so you said that it could be up to one student could submit even up to a whole year, like their first year of AP classes. And regardless of the cost, which really isn't, I mean, it's great that they can get it for a more less expensive cost, but that's not the driver. But the point is that they have the education, they have the knowledge, they completed the criteria, the universities have evaluated these classes, and so in light of that, there would not be any reason for a Board of Accountancy to actually get involved in determining whether an AP class should or should not be evaluated as a general course, whether you count it as an elective or as part of the core of the general studies, it would not be the board's place to question that, as based on what you're saying. That's
right, because these are general ed classes. Like I said, with the one exception out of it, I didn't count them up, but it's probably, I don't know, well over 50 courses. And these are, and in fact, I believe there's only three or four even business classes included in CLEP and none in AP. So it's puzzling to me where, you know, how this fits in. This is a general ed outside of the expertise of accounting and business. This is something that universities have the expertise on, and it's a well-controlled process.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any questions from board members on the AP or CLEP classes? Any additional information that you want to know? Looking around at the board members, I don't see or hear any other comments. Kyle, Kimberly, and Patricia, thank you so much for joining us this morning and taking the time out to address this for us, both from the NASPA side, and Elizabeth, thank you for your comments from the higher education side. We appreciate the education, and it helps inform the board members in the decisions that we should be making and in decisions we should not be making. So thank you very much for your time this morning. You're welcome to stay with us.
Yeah.
So Kyle is here to talk to us about the international evaluation.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Kyle, let's turn it back over to you for the international piece of it.
Okay. So what my department does within NASBA, we do the international evaluation report. And we take that higher education outside of the U.S. and we equate it to the U.S. System. Our report makes it basically turns it into almost a U.S. transcript, easy for the Oregon Board and other state boards to agree and determine eligibility. So my team is tasked with taking this education and equating it to our system. I think one of the main topics was the professional education. Is that what you're interested in for this?
Yeah, ACCA was specific, Kyle, one of the ones that was called out to me. We want to provide that information as to NIS, the reason we deem it professional education and don't accept it, so maybe give a little bit more detail on that, but in particular the carve-outs and things like that.
Yeah, and that's, so the ACCA, we deem that professional qualification. So what that means is it's not through a properly accredited university. So whether in the United Kingdom, India, Australia, there's usually a Ministry of Education that's recognizing these schools and overseeing programs. So ACCA will be similar to an organization, and it doesn't have that academic accreditation like a college or university would have. That being said, also looking further into the program, there are a lot of different ways for entry. They allow a ton of exemptions based on numerous things. Makes it extremely hard to ascertain how these students are obtaining those credits. And just getting those exams, it's a heavy amount of self-preparation, just taking an exam. It's a pretty widely obtained credential for the accounting industry, especially in Europe, United Kingdom. So, you know, you probably see it on your resume, and companies may look for that, but our stance, we're not equating it to an academic education that's comparable or equivalent to a regionally accredited college or university in the United States.
And Kyle, just if you could touch briefly, since this is the Association of Certified or Chartered Certified Accountants, we do have where we take people who are chartered accountants that aren't part of the mutual recognition agreements. That this, I don't think, for India or something. Can you talk about why you accept certain chartered accountants versus others also, just so they have that information?
Yeah, and so there are a few that we've looked into that are outside of the MRA that we have. And like one being said in India, we've looked into that program, how the universities, how the government in India also recognizes and treats that credential. Looking at the preparation for those courses, what that credential leads to, and it put it on an academic track Compared to something like the where ACCA, we've seen heavy amount of self-preparation, a ton of carve-outs that really they can gain access to without having college education, many times straight out of high school. And so like looking into other programs, more of a structure to obtaining the information and preparing for those examinations, and then how is it treated by that government and what does it lead to? A lot of times maybe they could go straight into a master or PhD level program based on that chartered accounting track that they were in.
Great, thank you, Kyle.
I would just say that one of our goals is to make sure that you're not putting international candidates on a different level than domestic. You don't want them to have advantages that a domestic candidate would not be able to have.
Agreed, thank you. Elizabeth, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but if I could call on you again, could you share with us what PSU does with international students if they're transferring credits into the university and how those are evaluated?
So I'm not an expert on this, but every once in a while, I would get a syllabus, a professionally translated syllabus, and be asked to evaluate it. But typically when the schools tend to build databases of common universities, and it rarely gets to a faculty member to decide if something is appropriate to transfer or not. There's a great deal of acceptance of a lot of classes internationally. But I'd be happy to put you in touch with somebody and get somebody to speak to that more specifically. But there is a process, and it is not done unilaterally by the university. They utilize experts on this.
Okay, great. Thank you, Elizabeth. I appreciate that. Any other questions for the board members to Kyle, Kimberly, or Patricia, or even Elizabeth on this, the AP Club International? Okay, I don't see anybody's hand up. So thank you very much again, Kyle, Kimberly, and Patricia. We really appreciate your time this morning. It was very educational. Definitely walking away with some additional information here today. And you're welcome to stay and listen to the rest of our board meeting. I also recognize you probably have other tasks on your desk that you have to get done today as well. So we'll leave that up to your decision. So, but thank you very much.
Appreciate you. Thank you. We appreciate you being invited.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so I'm going to refer back to our public meeting agenda and go back into order here. So at this time, I'd like to go ahead and adjourn into the executive session under the authority of ORS 192.660.2.H for consideration of records exempt from disclosure and counsel advice.